We're not the first generation to celebrate a holiday in the midst of trauma. The late historian Stanley Weintraub wrote an entire book about World War I and the Christmas truce on the Western Front. December, 1914. Rain. Mud. Gunfire. British and German snipers fired at each other all day long. At night, they snuck out to collect the corpses. Troops on both sides were dug into their trenches. And then, the Germans did something totally unexpected.
They put up Christmas trees with candles clamped on them. They came ready-made with candles already clamped. And singing Christmas songs like Silent Night, they gathered around the trees and they lit them. And this was, of course, hazardous. Some of them were shot down immediately. But pretty soon, the British on the other side recognized the Christmas carols. And Silent Night was the same song in each language. It was a German song adopted by the British. And soon the British were singing Christmas carols too. Before long, troops began crawling under the barbed wire in no man's land to the other side. The British in particular, because they wanted to see those Christmas trees up close. And the two sides met in no man's land. And this, of course, was spontaneous and illegal. Fraternization, in fact, was considered treason and punishable by death. But they became friendly, they exchanged presents in the darkness, and they decided, let's meet again as daylight comes on Christmas Day. But they realized as they gathered in the darkness, the number of dead that cluttered the area was so great that they decided we couldn't really get together in daylight unless we first removed the corpses. And so at Christmas Day dawn, they buried the dead with due ceremony, very moving individual ceremonies. Both sides did this and they helped each other. It wasn't that they just picked out their own men and took them aside to bury. As they were doing it, they realized we've cleared a space. A space in which we can not only fraternize, but, said some of the Scots, why don't we play football? And the friendliness continued in sharing food, sharing rations, sharing the plethora of plum puddings and sausages and so on. The Germans even rolled over barrels of beer across no man's land to the British, who had no beer. It was a fantastic situation, and it was contagious. It didn't happen just in one place. It spread up and down the line. The British and the German generals were in chateaus or hotels far behind the lines. They didn't know quite what was going on, but they kept getting weird reports of what was happening. The highest ranking man I found who participated was a British Brigadier General. He visited the lines and he discovered that there was nothing he could stop. He said, what was I to do? Order my men shot in the back? He knew that morale couldn't stand for that. But the commanding officers had the solution. You always took troops out of the trenches and gave them a rest and put in fresh troops. In both sides, they did that. They put in troops who had no involvement in the war, who had not yet learned to like the enemy. They hated the enemy because they were indoctrinated to do so. And so fresh troops came in on both sides, and gradually the war began again. And the war began in some cases with some striking bits of chivalry. A German officer would approach a British one and say, "We have been ordered to shoot again. We're going to fire into the air." And the British officer would say, "Once you begin firing, we'll fire into the air to let you know that we understand and the war will have to start again." The troops who had not been involved had no trouble going to war. But those who had been involved wrote home to their parents, to their wives, to their girlfriends, letters of great wonder. "Mother, you won't believe what happened to me. You won't believe how we celebrated Christmas."
That was the late historian Stanley Weintraub, author of Silent Night, the story of the World War I Christmas Truce.